Last week on the Health Report, we covered how the health system can take a systematic approach to reducing errors and increasing quality. This week, another visiting expert in safety and quality, who was here as the guest of the Clinical Excellence Commission in New South Wales. He was talking about a major and understudied area of medical error in diagnosis. Mark Graber is a US physician who now works as a senior fellow at a not-for-profit research institute called RTI International in North Carolina.
In my opinion, it's the largest patient safety problem we face right now. Our best guess is that one in every 10 diagnoses is wrong. That's the pool from which harm and even death arises.
They're frankly wrong.
Yes, many are wrong or missed or just not made in time or should have been made much earlier.
Now, there's a long journey to diagnosis, potentially. There's the person recognizing that they've got a problem and the time to actually see a doctor in the first place. Then there's the history taking, if it's been adequate. Then there's the examination. Then there's the pathology or the X-ray imaging. And then there's bringing all that data together. So when you look at that journey to diagnosis, where are the key elements that error occurs?
Well, you're absolutely right. Diagnosis plays out over time, and one thing we don't really have a good feel for is what that time should be. How long should it take to diagnose breast cancer or other diseases that you might think of? We just haven't really developed those standards yet. And if you look at where the breakdowns are in the process of diagnosis, they're everywhere. Doctors don't really have enough time to spend with their patients, so the history gets abbreviated. They're not as good with the physical exam as they should be. We're not familiar with all the latest tests and exactly which one to order.
And do too many of the wrong kind.
We may do the wrong one. We even over-order tests. So we over-diagnose, we under-diagnose. And what's really sad is that nobody's really measured the incidence of diagnostic error. I don't even know my own rate of diagnostic error.
Well, I don't know your own. I mean, you're a world authority in this area.
Because I don't get the right feedback. If I see a patient in clinic and I get it wrong, he may get admitted to some other hospital. And it's the culture of medicine that nobody will ever call me and tell me, oh, Dr. Graber got that one wrong. Autopsies have disappeared. That used to be really, there's nothing more powerful than seeing your own mistakes on the autopsy table. And now that we don't have autopsies anymore, there's nothing that's replaced that. So we don't get the kind of feedback that I think would help us be more reflective in our practice and more aware of our tendency to error, which is there all the time.
So how have you approached this problem?
Well, it's very early in the game. It's quite amazing. We've been practicing medicine for 2 millennia and everybody's just accepted diagnosis as being okay. There's probably nothing more difficult in a cognitive sense than coming up with a diagnosis. There's 10,000 diseases and each disease can present differently in different patients. We need to raise awareness amongst the physician community that they have a propensity to error. We need to make patients more aware that error is a possibility when they're given a diagnosis. We need our healthcare organizations to start paying attention to this.
We had a story on the Health Report recently, which was getting radiation oncologists, radiotherapists, to compete with a computer, and the computer beat them. Should we just stop doctors diagnosing altogether and just put it into a computer?
Oh, absolutely not. The complexity of diagnosis is far beyond what computers can do right now. So definitely you want to see a doctor. The role of computers is to make us better diagnosticians, and I think they can. There's some excellent tools available now to help with differential diagnosis, for example.
Differential diagnosis being there's 14 different causes of earache.
Right.
What's the right one for this
right.
person?
And we should take advantage of those things. We should take advantage of second opinions. There's nothing like fresh eyes to catch mistakes. It's a very powerful tool.
How do you know when to get a second opinion? Because what gets in the way here is the, if you like, the heuristic thinking of doctors. So it's both the benefit and the disadvantage. So you go and see an experienced doctor who asks you questions, and from their experience, they'll weigh up. Look, of the 14 causes, yes, you could have 10 of them, but in my experience, the balance of probability is there are going to be these two or three, and I'll do these tests to differentiate. But things get in the way, whether you've got a pierced nose or the things that you might say in your story which might lead them astray, the biases that they bring in. So you can be pretty certain of your diagnosis as the doctor and not feel the need for a second opinion.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, Norman. That is the central problem we face. We go through life trusting our intuition because it works so well, and doctors do the same thing. They've seen so many things over the years that this is how we diagnose 90% of the problems that present to us. And those are the ones that worry me, because our intuition is not 100% reliable. When we're thinking intuitively, we're not collecting a complete body of facts. We're sometimes jumping to conclusions. We call it premature closure. We are overly influenced by the context. If a patient comes in with abdominal pain, we start thinking of GI problems.
Gastrointestinal, the problems in your tummy.
Thank you.
It might not be in your tummy.
Thank you. It may be a vascular problem. And we don't think of those things right away. We think about what comes to mind first.
What role has the patient in this? Increasingly, people are going to the web, dialing in their symptoms and coming up with a list of diagnoses for themselves. The doctor takes a deep sigh, thinking this 15-minute consultation is now going to take an hour because of the sheaf of materials they come in. But there is a little bit of research to suggest that patients are pretty good at diagnosis when they go to the web.
Oh, I'm not sure about that, but they definitely do go to the web, as do their doctors. Let me say it this way. I think patients can do a lot to help prevent diagnostic errors. I think we need to accept that when you're given a diagnosis, it's not a certainty. It's just a probability. I think it's a fair question and a good question to ask your doctor, what else could this be? I'd be happy if my doctor pulled out a checklist or used one of these online tools to make sure that the differential diagnosis was complete. And if I got a serious diagnosis, I'd ask for a second opinion.
Mark Graber, who's a senior fellow at RTI International in North Carolina. I'm Norman Swan, and you've been listening to The Health Report. I'm off for a few weeks, so Joel Werner will be filling in my stead. But don't stop podcasting. See you soon.